Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, August 1st. Holy crap, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino. Matt!
James, where did time fly?
Where did time fly? It's as though you have picked up your entire life this weekend and moved it a couple of miles and put it back down.
It's not done yet, but otherwise it's pretty close. Yeah, hopefully I'll have, you know, electricity and internet on Monday, so we'll see. But some other people picking things up. Unfortunately, we have to bid a fond farewell to Jesse Tyler Ferguson and Fully Committed this weekend, as well as the really short return run of Motown on Broadway, as well as the great off-Broadway show Hadestown that closed this weekend, and along with the off-center production of God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit. So as this summer season kind of wraps up, some shows off-Broadway and Broadway as well are clearing out. But that means, James, you know, more shows are coming in.
Everybody's got nine lives.
It's a circle of life.
Yes. So The Cats Revival opens on Broadway.
It did. Andrew Lloyd Webber's mega hit Cats returned to Broadway last night at the Neil Simon Theater, directed as it was in 1982 by Sir Trevor Nunn, this time with choreography by Hamilton Tony winner Andy Blankenbuehler, recreating and expanding upon Gillian Lynn's original work, much to her dismay. Though Pussycat doll Nicole Scherzinger was originally slated to reprise her role as Grizabella, which she played to a considerable amount of acclaim in the West End, she backed out at the last minute and was replaced by pop singer Leona Lewis, who has sold more than 20 million albums during her career. Most of the reviews seem to focus on Cats as a property and its inherent strengths and weaknesses, as well as Miss Lewis as a performer. Neither were overly or exceptionally kind, but they both had their supporters. Variety's Marilyn Stasio wrote, "Memories could be fatal to this revival of Cats, specifically the memory of Betty Buckley as Grizabella singing Memory as it's meant to be sung, with heartbreaking beauty and exquisite pain by a great stage performer. Leona Lewis, the British pop star anointed by Andrew Lloyd Webber himself, isn't in her league. Happily, nothing as catty can be said of the rest of this fabulous revival of the 1981 musical phenom that padded its way around the world on Little Cat's feet." Aw. Time Out New York's David Cody wrote in his 2-star review, "Today, Cats feels experimental only in the sense of writing a show as if Oklahoma and Company never happened. Lloyd Webber's ability to craft a coherent book musical has always been shaky, School of Rock being a late career exception to the rule." He continues, "If there is a heart to the piece, it's Grizabella, the faded, outcast glamour cat. British crooner Leona Lewis has a big, yearning voice, but even her heavily amplified yowling of Memory can't make the past worth revisiting." NBC New York's Robert Kahn said, "Lewis tackles matters like a champ. The best way to approach a song like Memory is with determined understatement. That's precisely what Lewis delivers, in a performance that reminded me of the way mega star Jennifer Hudson gave us a restrained Shug Avery last season in The Color Purple." In terms of the show's choreography, Kahn wrote, "Blankenbuehler's work acutely enhances the personality of each cast, as with the acrobatics of," James, I'm going to screw up these names because I know nothing about Cats, "Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer." Does those sound right?
You stuck it again.
Stuck the landing. To close out, Kahn wrote, "As a wistful recollection, Cats is guaranteed to leave you feline groovy." Oh. Yes, he actually wrote that, and I apologize for reading it. He finishes, "Cats is here now, though I wouldn't bet on it lasting forever." Some of the cast members that critics singled out as doing really strong work were Christopher Gurr as Gus, Ricky Ubita as Mephistopheles, Jess Laproto and Shanika Gooden as Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer that I mentioned a few minutes ago. James, you're seeing it this week, right?
Yeah, I see it on Thursday evening, and we'll be back to report on it. A lot of the reviews that I read today were very. The first paragraph seemed to be across the board apologetic.
Yes,
That everybody apologized that they had seen it before, or they apologized that they hadn't seen it, that they're too young to have seen it, and those people I want to smack. And then I just write the review. I mean, I was a fan of Cats, and
I think it comes with so much baggage that you almost have to unpack that before the review is even written, because obviously it ran for like 18 years, so people love it. So, but then there's also some of the, as we mentioned last week, theatrical, you know, intelligentsia hate it for some reason. I've never seen it, so it's almost like you have to declare which side of that fence you're on.
So I just want to applaud you for nailing Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser.
Rumpel Teaser was easier. Mungo Jerry, I wasn't sure.
They're a couple of notorious cats. And okay. Matt Tamanini, you always land on your feet. Next up, our little Harry Potter section. And I fear, Matt, that the Harry Potter section might become the replacement for the Hamilton section.
Oh, heaven help us.
Oh, on Saturday, the 30th of July, as they say in London, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child Parts 1 and 2 opened at the Palace Theatre in London, not here in New York, to pretty solid reviews. It seems that the reviews could have said anything that you would have... they could have really said anything, and you would have had a better chance of Lin-Manuel Miranda coming to your house to perform Hamilton. You had a better chance of that happening than getting a ticket to this five-plus-hour staging of the story, where the final book left off as Harry and his crew send their children to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Now, Matt, we've talked about this before, and you are not so much a Harry Potter hater as much as you just have no experience whatsoever. You've not read the books.
Correct.
You've not seen the movies. I don't know how you could have a pop culture podcast and not have any experience with this, but that's a whole other discussion.
Well, it happened because I think the first movie came out 20 years ago now. I just turned 35, so I was 15 and just probably thought myself a little too cool to watch a movie about a wizard. And so I think it was just one of those things where if you don't catch on at the beginning, as more movies come out and more books come out, I'm a completist. I have to watch things from the beginning. If I pick up a new TV show, I have to start on season one. And so it was just like, by the time everyone was like, okay, it's okay to like these, there was just too much work to do. I'm sure at some point I'll watch them. I have nothing against them, but it's just one of those blind spots that I have, like Breaking Bad. Never seen Breaking Bad. I own DVDs of the entire series, and I've never cracked them open because it's too intimidating to feel like I have to start at the beginning.
Holy moly, Matt Tamanini, you and I are exactly the same. I have Breaking Bad too, and I just can't do it. I just can't make the commitment to start at the beginning, but I have the DVDs right there waiting for me.
Yeah.
Oh,
someday.
You know who has the best job in the world?
What's that?
One of the best jobs in the world is Ben Brantley. You know, the Times sent him over to London to spend a few weeks in August over there, you know, expense account, three martini lunches and all. And he got a chance to review The Cursed Child. And he says, playing with time, you know, we can't do that. But playing with time, both gleefully and earnestly, is what the show's creators are doing. The production's memorable images include the most dazzling, disturbing clock since the heyday of Salvador Dali. Its plot is built on a fantasy that most of us indulge from early childhood. What if we could rewrite our own histories? So I'll include a link of Brantley's review, as well as this next little piece coming up here, which is that the Times is also saying that with the huge success of the play in London and the book, which was released, I guess the book was released on Saturday.
Saturday to Sunday, midnight.
Yeah, Saturday to Sunday, midnight. And that was an international release. It has a throwback to the heydays of when Harry Potter books were released and there would be overnight lines and lines down the block and people getting the first copies and putting them away and things like that. A bookstore in your neighborhood that's not a Barnes & Noble's. What a concept that is.
I don't know what that is. Bookstore is a Barnes & Noble at this point, at least down here. Well, one of the reasons they released the book to coincide with opening night in the West End is because apparently there's some secrets or some plot twist in the stage show. So they didn't want people to read the script before it was officially opened and kind of have it spoiled. Apparently, I read something that when you walked into the Palace Theater in London, they gave you these little wristbands that said something along the lines of don't spoil the secret.
Well, so it's actually they are giving out wristbands and metallic buttons that say hashtag keep the secrets.
Keep the secrets, yeah.
And I thought that was really funny because at the end of Privacy at the Public Theater with Daniel Radcliffe, who was the screen version of Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe says more or less, don't think he says keep the secrets, but it's very similar to that. keep our secret or something like that, because there's a lot of secrets that are in Privacy down at the Public as well. So I thought that was ironic. But that's they cool. say that this Harry Potter is going to come to New York. And the producer of the London production, Sonia Friedman, who is a huge Broadway producer. I mean, her IMDb page goes on as long as the internet. You know, it's like an infinite scroll page that you have in various designs. So Sonia Friedman says that they are going to sit down and make a plan to bring it to New York, but they haven't given us any time frames yet. So that's something for us to look forward to as well. We better move forward right into Kurt Vonnegut's God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater.
Yeah, last week, New York City Center's Off-Center program presented a little-known Howard Ashman and Alan Menken musical, as you said, Kurt Vonnegut's God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, starring the likes of Santino Fontana, Skylar Astin, James Earl Jones, Rebecca Naomi Jones, Bryn O'Malley, Kate Weatherhead, and more. The reviews were all pretty strong, most noting that the property itself showed the promise from the young writing team that they would go on to display even in more fuller effect in shows like Little Shop and their Disney collaborations, but it didn't have the tightnesses of any of those properties. The New York Times' Charles Isherwood wrote, "As a drunken and possibly lunatic millionaire, Santino Fontana gives a performance of ineffable sweetness. Despite his praise for the show's star, Isherwood isn't sure that the show makes sense as a whole. Vonnegut's black brand of satire is not, in truth, a comfortable fit for the stage," he writes. "As things grow loopier and more leaden, you may begin to pine for the coherence, emotional nuance, and less blunt-edged humor of, I don't know, maybe a Disney movie." He concludes saying, "The underlying moral of Vonnegut's convoluted tale may be familiar. In a world gone mad, only the mad are truly sane." Yawn. "But in providing this supposed madman with a palpable humanity, Mr. Fontana somehow makes it seem fresh." I think Isherwood was tipping his hand a little bit on what he thought there. AM New York's Matt Wendman, friend of the show, gave the concert staging 3 out of 4 stars, writing, "Mr. Rosewater faithfully reflects both the novel's haywire plot and socially critical tone. The songs are fresh, fun, and occasionally heartfelt. The storytelling can be rough and chaotic, but that is to be expected with this kind of property. I would not be surprised if this production serves as the stepping stone for a longer run. However, even if that does not happen, it should, nay must, receive a cast album, which will encourage amateur and regional groups to produce it." Finally, my Broadway World colleague Michael Dale wrote, "Two acts may be a bit much for God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, as there doesn't seem to be enough story to keep the evening from seeming a bit padded, but Ashman's irreverent intelligence and Menken's attractive mix of musical styles, dominated by Americana-style folk and blues, makes this an excellent example of a lost musical that any fan of the genre needs to get to know." James, I know you've had a busy week and an up and down week, but have you heard any rumors about a longer life for this show? I think if it did happen, that'd be great, but I would think it would have to be kind of recast, as Santino Fontana and Skylar Astin are both regulars on TV shows. Santino on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Skylar on a new highly buzzed about show for the cable network Epix called Graves.
Yeah, these type of things that happen, I mean, really, at the end of July, beginning of August, I think all the people who make decisions are out of town. So I think that if there is a buzz for this, it's going to have to be, you know, after Labor Day that folks start thinking about what kind of real estate is free and what kind of, you know, you look at a show like this and you decide, okay, these 5 or 6 theaters are appropriate for it. Are they going to be available? You know, let's do the math here and see if they need to recast it or if they can hold off until Fontana and Astin are available. You know, There's a whole craziness of producing that goes into this.
Yeah.
So it was a dog day afternoon of heat here in New York. Was it making Broadway bark?
I think it was. On Saturday, the 18th annual Broadway Barks Dog and Cat Adoption event took over Schubert Alley. The event, which was founded by Bernadette Peters and Mary Tyler Moore, featured a bunch of Broadway stars, including but definitely not limited to Reed Birney, Jane Houdyshell, C.R. Boggess, Michael Cerveris, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, Sean Hayes, Brian Stokes Mitchell, B.B. Newworth, Jesse Mueller, Beth Malone, and many, many more. The free event was co-hosted by Peters and Gloria Estefan and featured hundreds of adoptable animals from 27 animal rescue groups. Hopefully on Monday they'll send out a press release and say how many animals were adopted. James, I'm allergic to anything with either fur or feathers, but this is a really cool and worthwhile event for animal lovers in the Broadway community and fans as well.
Yeah, it really is. So we won't be making you do those live remotes next year.
Nope. No, sir.
All right. The Arena Stage founder and legend Zelda Fitchandler died at age 91, and she had such an immense impact on the theater scene in Washington and nationwide, we thought we'd mention it.
Yeah, James, I think in our 100-plus shows together, we've mentioned Washington, D.C.'s Arena Stage on a number of occasions in a number of different circumstances, which goes to show you just how important that theater is to the greater theatrical community. And a lot of that was due to the visionary leadership of Zelda Fitchandler, who passed away on Friday at the age of 91. She led the theater company, which she co-founded with her husband Thomas and theater teacher Edward Mangum, for 41 years, directing more than 50 shows and producing over 400. Her work at the Arena Stage was one of the driving forces in the regional theater movement that brought quality professional theater to cities around the country. Arena Stage, under Fitchandler's leadership, was the first regional theater to send a play to Broadway with A Great White Hope, starring James Earl Jones, in 1968. And in 1976, the theater was the first to win the Outstanding Regional Theater Tony Award. And if you go through and read the New York Times obit for her, the article that I know that's probably not technically an obit, but just all of the things that she was able to do with that theater company, along with her husband. She did kind of the artistic side. Her husband did the business side. Is really incredible. She stepped down in 1991 and then ran, I think, the an acting group. I can't remember, the actors group or something, where she just contributed so much to the theater community as a whole. And it's probably not a name that a lot of people know. So take a look at that article we'll put in the show notes, and kind of marvel at all that she was able to do with a theater outside of New York City.
Absolutely. So next up, Jen Giambattista is replacing Sierra Boggess in School of Rock.
Yeah, late last week we learned that Jen Giambattista would be taking over as principal Rosalie Mullins in the Broadway production of School of Rock when Sierra Boggess, who originated the role, leaves to return to Christine Daae, this time in Phantom of the Opera, actually in Paris, which is kind of cool. Giambattista has appeared in 6 other Broadway shows, including starring in the original Broadway productions of All Shook Up, which is a cast album that I love, as well as Tarzan. She will begin performances in School of Rock on August 9th.
And before we wrap up, I just want to make a little recommendation here. Playbill had an article on Barbra Streisand and Hugh Jackman's duet, where they joined voices on a song called Any Moment Now from Smile. So we'll have that in a link to that in the show notes. Go check it out. It's a really interesting thing. So, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWW Matt, and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for starting off your Monday with us, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
What a life we could build in a home that is filled with love and laughter. Any moment now, you'll say to me,
you humor me,
chase the past,
those overcast days.
Oh, any moment now. Promise me we'll talk about this.
Sure.
When?